This is a WATD Political Forum on 95.9 WATD. Online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
Good evening and thank you. Welcome to a WATD Political Forum. The election race is for the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate seat. That includes the towns of Plymouth, Kingston, Pembroke, Sandwich, Falmouth, and Bourne. Incumbent Democrat State Senator Sue Moran facing a challenge from Republican Jay McMahon. I'm your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined by Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi. Good evening.
Hello.
And reporter Charles Mathewson asking questions. Timing you all is Amy Leonard, and we're joined by our media partner, PAC-TV, providing video coverage. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Now, our format is simple, and we've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready, no longer than 2 minutes open and a 1 minute close. Then we have a round of questions from reporters, a lightning round, and as you know, it's our favorite part because the answers are either yes or no, which nobody running for office can do, or two sentences tops, and we will ask what kind of an answer we would prefer. And if there's time, the candidates can ask each other a question or two. Also, please try to keep your answers to around a minute. If you consistently go over, ramble, or start to repeat yourself, then you get the bell. Also, in this election season, I just want to remind people we do have a format. We have a time limit. We have boundaries, and here's how it works. If you go over your allotted time, you get the 5-second countdown, which means a little grace period. If you're still talking, you get the bell, and if you're talking beyond that, you get your mic cut. That's pretty much how we handle it. We find most people pretty much comply. Amy has the construction paper here. Green means go, red means stop, and yellow, in theory, means you've got 10 seconds. Well, maybe when you're driving, but here it means definitely you've got 10 seconds. Now, we choose opening and closing order out of the official WATD stand-in newsroom koozie and just moments ago, and we will begin with Jay McMahon. Then we'll go to Sue Moran for our opening statements. We'll switch that order at the end. And we want to remind people, too, that tonight's forum is brought to you by Stuart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stuartpaint.com for special home repair and painting offers and to schedule a free estimate. Now, let's get started, and good evening, Jay McMahon.
Hi, thank you. I want to thank WATD for hosting this event. I'm often asked, why am I running? It's my children. I want them to have a better future. It is clear that our state is heading in the wrong direction. Our economy is in trouble, and the lack of respect for our first responders is heartbreaking. However, I am optimistic. I believe that we can turn things around and put our state back on track, but it's going to take someone who is committed to fighting for this district, not lobbyists or a radical left-wing extremist agenda. As a lifelong resident of this district, no one cares more. I've been involved for decades serving in the United States Army National Guard. I was a second lieutenant in the military police. I've been in law enforcement. I was a police officer in the town of Barnstable, and I was also working in law enforcement with the Barnstable County Sheriff's Office. I've also been a coach for Bourne Youth Baseball, and I was the coordinator for Bourne Babe Ruth. I've been involved as a lecturer with Bourne High School, Wareham High School, and area community colleges. I've also been involved with the Bourne Financial Development Corporation, which was a volunteer position, and its mission was to invite green businesses into the town of Bourne. These years of experience tell me that you don't vote for a police reform bill that would jeopardize public safety, and you don't vote for legislation allowing communities to bypass Proposition 2.5 to raise our property taxes. That's why I am endorsed by police unions and pro-taxpayers groups. Most importantly, I'm proud to be the only candidate who has a plan to revive our economy and put people back to work. With another 1,500 jobless claims filed, there is no time to waste in restoring our economy. Thank you for taking the time to listen tonight. And I want you to know that I would be honored to have your support and your vote. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Jay McMahon. Now we're going to go to Sue Moran for your opening statement.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. My name is Susan Moran. I'm your Massachusetts senator, and I'm running for re-election. COVID has forced us to adapt. We're seeing grandchildren only outdoors. We're delaying medical appointments. The one positive being a little less traffic and cleaner air. It continues to be a challenge, but we will face these challenges together, and with science, we will succeed. Many are struggling. We must look to create new ways of taking care of each other and our resources. Since you elected me in the spring only 100 days ago, I formed a bipartisan coalition to make changes in the way we require our community hospitals to live up to family health care access and standards. I directed hundreds of thousands of dollars into our schools for much-needed technology upgrades that will allow for changes our teachers and students need to succeed. I delivered a first-of-its-kind economic development bill to create jobs, provide fishermen with tools to adapt, feed us, and protect our vital coastal waters from pollution. As vice chair of the Senate Housing Committee, I'm working on legislation to build affordable communities, reduce waste, and serve the needs of our youngest and our oldest families. And as a member of the Transportation Committee, I secured over $350 million for roadway modernization that will bring in infrastructure jobs, make roads safer, and replace our unsafe bridges. You have the power to bring resources to our district by reelecting me. My opponent has no legislative experience, has never held office, proposes dangerous tactics, ignoring science, and opposes sensible gun control. He's an anti-collaborator running on divisiveness and fear-mongering. If you reelect me on November 3rd, I promise to continue to honor the responsibility you've entrusted to me. There's more at votemoran.com. Please stay safe, vote early, and vote Moran. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Sue Moran. Now we're going to go to questions and begin with Kevin Tanji. Questions for the candidates.
The Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant in Plymouth went offline more than a year ago. I want to know what your concerns are about the decommissioning process and what role should you, if you are the legislator elected come January, what role will you play when it comes to the safe cleanup of that site? We'll start with the senator.
Thank you, Kevin. This is something that I've been meeting with constituents in an ongoing basis. I've also met with the town manager of Plymouth, Melissa Ranke, also the chair of the board of selectmen, Ken Tavares, who, by the way, has endorsed me. And it's about two things. One, of course, overall is ongoing safety and just being sure that the canisters are safe for the moment, and hopefully that there'll be a long-term plan that they move out. Senator Dan Wolf was a member of the committee, along with John Mahoney, and they've been doing a terrific job as sort of watchdogs. Dan will be replaced soon, and as your senator, I'm able to recommend to the Senate president a replacement. So it'll be ongoing watchdog interest for me going forward for the town of Plymouth and for the entire district.
Jay, same question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, as you know, the venue for this is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. There's a lot of problems about the containment vessels that they've built to hold the spent rods. What needs to be done, as I see it, is that we got to put pressure on our federal legislators to look into this and to pay for what is going to be required to move those rods out of here. But another problem with it being decommissioned is that it was done, and it appears to be almost in a haphazard fashion, because we were getting tremendous amount of energy, electricity, from that plant. Now that the plant is off, Massachusetts actually has to import electricity from Maine and Canada and other places, and it's coming to us at a very high cost. In fact, Massachusetts right now pays some of the highest costs of electricity in the nation.
It was Jay McMahon. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Hello. The November ballot will include two referenda, right to repair and ranked choice voting. If one or both pass, would you vote to tweak them in the legislature? And how would you do that?
Let's start with Jay.
Okay, so right to repair, clearly I'm in favor of the ballot question. I would vote yes on it. I think that there is a right to repair. I think that people should be able to select where they want their cars repaired. And I think that for the manufacturers to hide behind that it's some kind of a proprietary interest in not allowing regular repair facilities to have that information, I think is crazy. I think it doesn't give the consumers the various rights that they need. And with respect to ranked voting, I sure hope that fails. I'm voting against it because in that case, it's always the second or third ballot people who wind up winning an election after everyone has campaigned as hard and as difficult as they had to win the election.
Jay, think of yourself as a state senator. If, say, ranked choice voting came before the legislature for a tweak, a change, would you change it and how?
Well, actually, at the way it looks, I would probably, if I had to do it, and I don't want it to win, but if I had to do it, I would be looking for some supermajority for the second or third.
Okay, and right to repair, you know, the 2012 law was tweaked by the legislature.
Yes, it was.
So would you reconsider it?
If it passes, I'm in favor of it passing. You mean if it doesn't pass?
Either way.
Well, if it doesn't pass, I don't know what you can do. I mean, basically, if it doesn't pass, basically the electorate is allowing the individual automobile dealerships to maintain a proprietary interest in the information that they have. I don't think it's gonna pass. But would I look at it at that time? Obviously, I would, because I'm in favor of the consumer having the rights to take their car wherever they want, and so I would do something about it. But right now, I haven't got a specific plan on what I would do if it goes that way.
So, Moran, would you tweak either of these questions if they pass?
I would. First of all, I am in favor of the right to repair. The way I would tweak it is based upon my experience as a litigation attorney in federal court with privacy cases. So I would tweak it to probably beef up the privacy aspect of the right to repair, because some folks were concerned that their private information might come out through some of the information. So if it does pass, I am for it, I would probably just tweak it with a little bit of protection. With respect to ranked choice voting, I'm not in favor. That being said, if it did pass, if that was the voters' will, I would tweak it in terms of the implementation. So I would ask the Secretary of State to have, you know, sort of paragraph bios on each candidate, so that anyone who maybe didn't have a chance to fully research the candidates and they were required to rank choice vote, they would have the opportunity to rank on the ballot.
Now, the original right to repair bill in 2012 was signed by Deval Patrick in 2013 after the legislature made some changes, and the significant change the legislature made was to allow what the dealerships are now doing, the car manufacturers are now doing, which is wireless access to the computer and the computers in vehicles. Do you expect, if this passes, which it probably will, it will come to the legislature, and what would you do about it?
So other than the privacy aspects, what I would expect going forward is that the big business is always trying to build better mice traps, right? And the core of the legislation was, driven toward allowing an even playing field with small business as well. So I would try to put safeguards in addition to privacy for consumers. I would put safeguards in so that there would sort of stop this one-upmanship, that the intent of the legislation to even the playing field between small and large business would be firmed up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
Both candidates have had interesting and varied endorsements from different groups. I'd like you each to tell me who three of your endorsements are and what that means about your candidacy. Jay?
Okay, well, I've been endorsed by the Massachusetts Taxpayers' Best Ally. I've been endorsed by the Pembroke Police Union. I've also been endorsed by the New England Police Benevolence Association. And I've got other police organizations that are also lining up, but they're putting it to a vote to endorse me. So I can't say I've got them yet, but but it looks promising. Now, the reason they're endorsing me is because of my stand against the so-called police reform bill. It's one of the worst bills to hit the legislature. It's a bill that doesn't reform anything, and it's a hazard to public safety. For instance, parts of that bill require that the school resource officer, who is a police officer, cannot, and they're mandated, they cannot give information to the police department or any various agencies, law enforcement agencies, about gang activity within the school. And I can't support that.
Okay, and we'll get to that issue a little bit later. But Sue, tell me who maybe three of your endorsements are and what that means about your candidacy.
Sure. I've been endorsed. Three of them are the Mass Teachers Association, the Mass Nurse Association, and former Senate President Terry Murray. I'm very proud of the MTA, as my daughter was a teacher. She's the mom of two of my grandchildren. She unfortunately passed of a horrible just heart attack to hit a young woman at 32. My second, the Mass Nurse Association. My daughter Shannon is a doctor of nursing and breast cancer oncology. She just had her first baby. And I know what it's like to have a first responder in the family who's been dealing with the health crisis of COVID. And then, of course, personally, former Senate President Terry Murray, for her to endorse my candidacy, it's just something I'm incredibly proud to have in this district.
Okay. I'm just going to just do a quick follow-up with both of you. Jay, you brought up about this police reform bill, one of the most emotional issues we've touched on in every single forum we've done. Do you support it at all, or are you completely against it?
I am completely against it, and I'll tell you why. First, it starts with a wrong premise. It starts out with a premise that law enforcement is racist in Massachusetts. They are not. Prior to May 25 of this year, the death of George Floyd, there was no one except maybe Elizabeth Warren who was saying that law enforcement is racist front to back. She was talking about nationwide. But they're not racist here in Massachusetts. You only need to look at the Boston Police Department, which is the largest police organization in Massachusetts. It is head by an African American, and it has been for 2 years. William Gross, probably one of the best police commissioners that we've had on the Boston Police Department. But even Massachusetts voters are not racist. I mean, Deval Patrick was reelected twice. How about in the United States, in the nation? I mean, Obama was elected and reelected. So people are not racist. And just because somebody in Minnesota did what they did, a police officer there, doesn't make Massachusetts police racist.
So what about this bill? I think you supported it, didn't you? Do you support reform?
I voted for the Senate reform shift and build bill. I, however, spoke with the police chiefs in my district early on about their views. They said, we've been asking for these kind of changes in regulation for about 10 years. We're glad the legislature is now addressing it. That being said, Sue, we would like you not to vote. In fact, we would like you to vote to amend the bill on the committee, which is a review committee. If there is an incident with police, it would go to a committee. And the issue was, would the committee primarily have a majority of members that were not experienced police to the level that these chiefs wanted? And that made perfect sense to me, because whenever, whether a Board of Selectmen chair or Barnstable Economic Development, whenever I have looked to make changes, I've asked the boots on the ground what's most important, and so I went with the chiefs on that.
Okay. Charlie, you wanted to do a quick follow-up?
Yes, my follow up in just about all of these forums.
Okay.
There are three broad parts to the reform bill: training, suing, and licensing. It's called certification, but it's essentially licensing. Do you favor any of those, Jay?
No, I do not, and I'll tell you why. The bill as it is now takes away qualified immunity from the police officers, and it goes even further, not only the police officers, firefighters, and first responders. And I'm glad that Sue brought up that she had spoken to the police chiefs, because when I read in the Cape Cod Times that she said she did speak to the police chiefs, I figured I better call them and find out where they stand with this, because I'm hearing conflicting information. So I spoke with each one in the district, and those police chiefs say they hate this bill. They don't want any part of it. They know what it does when it comes to qualified immunity. It knows what it does when it comes to gang violence in the schools, and they just don't see the need for it. When I talked to the police about standards, when I said to the chief, well, what about the standards? They all agree that Massachusetts sets the standards for the nation. We have the highest standards, and when it comes to this particular law, it was a knee-jerk reaction by spineless politicians.
And Sue, I'm going to give you a minute to respond to what Jay said, that he said that they didn't like what you said, but that's not what you said.
Sure. So when I spoke with the police chiefs, they said they've been meeting with the Senate leadership, with the House leadership, and they understood that the bill was likely to move forward. They said, on that basis, we really want you to be our gladiator and our advocate with respect to this committee, because we've been trying to implement the training and the licensing aspect for about 10 years. We're glad it's coming. Uniformity is good. That's going to help everyone. But we want to be sure the folks on the disciplinary committee have enough experience in law enforcement to make those informed calls. So that's that response.
Okay, now, Charlie, you wanted to ask her the same question that you asked Jay.
Yeah, same question. Which of the three aspects do you support?
So I support the training and the licensing, as did the chiefs, and there really is very little disagreement about that. There is more disagreement about the suing, the qualified immunity. In fact, I was just reading an article in the Globe within the last day or two written by a physician that said, well, you know, if I amputated the wrong leg, don't you think you should be able to sue me? This was the analogy that he was making about the bill. What the bill does is that it doesn't change indemnification for police officers. No one's going to be losing their house. That's covered by insurance the municipalities have. What it does is it has an even playing field built into the court system. So right now, if there's a qualified immunity defense, the precedent, rule of law, is that if you don't fit squarely in every single fact, then your case goes away. What the Senate bill does, it allows each case to be looked at on its own merits.
Okay. Any follow-up on that, Charlie?
One more. Jay, I want to be clear about the training aspect of this. The bill, as proposed, also bans, for instance, chokeholds. You remember Anthony Bourdain, the chef?
Sure.
And writer?
Yes.
He was also a mixed martial artist. My younger son trains at the same gym that he did in Manhattan, and we've talked about this, and he said, you know, chokehold is completely ineffective. There are much better ways to take a person down, but police aren't necessarily trained in that. Now, I've heard you say that Massachusetts is some of the best trained police officers around, and I've asked operations captains and people who are in charge of police on the street, and they say, yeah, we don't have enough training in de-escalation and how to take down a crazy person, to put it bluntly. So you still feel that more training is not needed?
Okay, I read the bill. It's 89 pages. In it, it sets up all kinds of commissions that are not necessary and calling for it. Now, you mentioned about the chokeholds. Why doesn't the legislature pass a law, no chokeholds to be used by law enforcement? Why 89 pages of bureaucracy that this bill creates when it is completely unnecessary. If it's chokeholds, why not just have a paragraph that says law enforcement is not to use chokeholds when they're apprehending an individual? Here's what I've heard from the chiefs. They were blindsided by this bill. When this bill came out, no one was expecting the draconian measures that was within it. Now, Sue voted for this, and she's always has a tendency to vote against public safety because this bill does not enhance public safety. There are other issues as well. When the sheriffs are trying with their 287G plan with ICE to keep dangerous illegal aliens off the street, she votes against those plans. So she's always voting against public safety.
So how do you respond first, and what do you think about the need for training?
Sure. I think the need for uniform training benefits everyone. I think that that would be a welcome investment. Part of the bill looks at letting police do more policing and work with folks who are mental health professionals, who maybe are addiction professionals, rather than just throwing all of society's problems at the floor of police. As a Board of Selectmen chair, I've often been proud to give heroic awards to police. I've often been called upon to just give congratulatory speeches. In fact, I passed legislation for two of Falmouth officers that were hurt in a terrible gun battle. And this is, we have to take care of our officers and allow them the training that they want and they well deserve, and be sure that their job is the professional job that they signed up for.
Sorry. Kevin Tachi.
The state's economy and employment numbers seem to be rebounding from the pandemic. Depending on whether Massachusetts is going to see a second COVID-19 spike, what measures should the state take to continue to bolster the economy?
Okay, hold that thought. You know why?
We got
a quick break here. Stuart just Pacey. Reminding what you're listening to. Why, thank you. You're listening to a political forum here. It's the Plymouth and Barnstable State Senate seat. You've got the incumbent Sue Moran. You've got her challenger, Jay McMahon. It's brought to you by Stuart Painting, encouraging you this fall to take pride in your vote and in your home. Visit stuartpaint.com for special home repair and painting offers and to schedule a free estimate. We'll be right back.
Seems like political season never ends, just like taking care of your home. Hi, I'm Sheldon Stewart of Stewart Painting in Hingham. Taking the first step in voting can be very similar to taking the first step in painting and repairing your home. Neither should wait. Take pride in your vote and your home. Visit our website at stewartpaint.com to learn more about our services, or stop by our Hingham office at 15 Levitt Street. Stewart Painting. Expect the best.
WATD's political forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Oh, thank you so much. I love the voice of Rob Hakala. And right before the break, we went to Kevin Tachi asking a question of the candidates. Would you repeat the question, Kevin?
I shall. It's about the state's economy and the employment numbers, which seem to be rebounding from the pandemic, as they did seem to dip. Depending on whether the state sees a second COVID-19 wave, what measures should the state and the officials take to bolster the economy? We'll start with you.
Thank you very much. So in the Senate, we've already taken some steps with respect to getting folks back to work. I think is one of the most important things that the state can do. In the transportation, I've brought $350 million to this district to prepare for new bridges. That would be jobs with respect to road construction, design, many jobs coming to the district from that piece of legislation. A second one, pretty novel, aquaculture. For clean water, you've probably seen shellfish farming, and it's really taking off all around the district. And I thought, and worked with some scientists at Woods Hole Oceanographic about doing aquaculture. So seaweed, so products could be soaps, lots of uses. Those are new jobs where people who may have lost their jobs or may want to help homeschool their kids half the day, they can go and farm in the evening.
Jay, same question. What needs to be done to further boost our economy if we do see a second spike?
Well, I'll tell you what, we got to do something different. We did the first time. I mean, the governor shut a lot of businesses down, including my own. He says lawyers are non-essential. Can you believe that? So there's a problem that we have, at least the first go around, and that's because the government actually picked winners and losers. They told us that we had to wear masks and we had to do social distancing. Everybody was glad with that, or at least real understood it. But then we started shutting businesses down. We called them non-essential. If you work for that business, or if it's your business, it's not non-essential. It's very essential to you. They said churches were non-essential. And I think any business could come up with a protocol, a distancing protocol, just like the liquor stores did, with masks and with social distancing while you're waiting to check out. So what do we need to do? I tell you what, I have a 10-point plan. I want you to go to my website, folks, and you can find it there, www.attorneyjmcmahon.com. I got a 10-point plan on how to revive this economy, and I'm the only candidate with a plan.
Jay, you mentioned the governor real quick in regards to folks were critical in regards to how he closed down the state. And his approach to reopening the state in certain phases. Do you feel that he took the right approach? Do you feel the administration took the right approach?
No, I think it was rather draconian. At first, we started in April where they shut down all the golf courses. Now, golf courses in and of themselves lend to social distancing just the way the game is played. So I started banging away on social media and everything else, telling people, tell the governor, and me as well, sending messages that you got to open up the golf courses, you got to open up the churches. You can do that by having them submit a safety protocol. And people were submitting them, but they were falling on deaf ears. I think that we should be able to have any businesses, a mom and pop store, operate the same way we let Walmart open up. I think we should let stores operate the same way that we let banks and the liquor stores. With social distancing and masks, that's appropriate protocol. Everybody all over the nation believes that's appropriate protocol. So why shut the whole industry down, have people out of work, and businesses lining up at the bankruptcy court?
If we do see a second spike, so what approach do you feel that the state should take?
I think that we should not close down all the businesses. I think we have protocols set up right now with the masks and the social distancing. No one's complaining about there being a problem coming out of liquor stores that somebody caught COVID-19 in the liquor store or the bank or any of those other businesses, and where you can't go in unless you have a mask.
Senator, do you feel that how the state reopened, it was the right approach when it came to phases?
I absolutely do. The governor was organized, thoughtful, made a phased approach, listened to all the constituency, had a committee that would consider whether you fit in a phase or not. I was part of and continue to be part of the Cape Reopening Task Force. I've had many constituents ask me to bring their particular situation to the governor. And the governor is not sort of willy-nilly listening to, you know, plans thrown at him. The governor is basing his decisions on science. The phasing it right now, he's moved ahead, except there are probably, 210 deaths right now? It's a very serious situation. There's a lot of vulnerability out there. And in fact, right now, I think I read in the Globe, there's maybe 40 towns that still have a spike that the governor is looking at and telling them they've got to wait. Thank you.
Do you feel they should follow the same protocol if we see another spike? Should he do the same process?
It's life-saving.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates?
Jay, that 10-point plan that you have on your website, it says, and I'm quoting, to recover from the government-mandated shutdown. Do you consider COVID serious or just a case of the flu?
No, I consider COVID serious. But what I also consider is that why is there winners and losers? In other words, why is mask and social distancing work okay for the banks? It works okay for the liquor stores. It works okay for food stores. But it doesn't work okay for a furniture store? In other words, why does the government have the right to shut things down, shut businesses down, when they should have at least the opportunity to submit a safe protocol and at least have the opportunity to reopen? If it's your business and you still have to pay a mortgage and you can't get any revenue in because the government told you you're non-essential, I find a problem with that. I find that when it just crosses constitutional lines and doesn't give people the opportunity to at least present a reasonable plan to reopen, to me that is too draconian. It doesn't minimize COVID. It just says that we can do this smartly.
Would you support a federal mandate for mask wearing?
Okay, so I would have to look at the mandate to see exactly what they're talking about, because right now, Massachusetts, you have to wear a mask. You have to wear a mask when you go into stores. You have to wear a mask when you go into the post office. So right now, we already have it. So what is a nationwide mask requirement going to do? Apparently, in South Dakota, they don't have a problem. Right now, in Florida, the governor decided to take away all restrictions that were originally implemented because of the coronavirus. So I'd have to look at that to see just what they're looking at. Are they looking at a sunset clause or a time when we'll look at this another time, depending on where certain numbers are? I have to see a standard that they have before I can just say, would I be in favor of a mask, nationwide mask requirement?
So, Moran, how do you respond to what Jay has been saying about businesses being mandated to close?
So the governor, science, and the courts have disagreed with what Jay has said, and it's for our public safety. The courts looked at whether the governor had the power to do the phased reopening for public health, and it was determined at the point it was reviewed, yes, the governor did. I think that the biggest thing that we all can do is to take politics out of health recommendations. I certainly believe that the thoughtful plan of phasing, looking at the activity, looking at the space, and it's not about, that's not a thing. It's not what business it is. It's about square footage. It's about the contact possibility. It's a very thought out plan that the governor and lieutenant governor have laid out. We have to take politics out of it, wear a mask, stay at least 6 feet apart so that we can get to the other side of this curve.
Thank you both.
Okay. The eviction moratorium in the state ends on October 17th. Do you think this should be extended, or do you think it's time to say that's the end? I'll start with you again, Sue.
Thank you, Christine. I think it should be extended. I expect it to be extended. I think that we're still waiting to see what the federal government is going to do in terms of helping people out with more funds to be able to afford their medicine, their child care, getting to work, their transportation. So I am in favor of extending. That being said, we, as a parallel, need to help landlords out as well. I'm also in favor of forbearance for landlords who are at risk of not paying their mortgage because their tenants aren't able to pay. I think we really have to continue the comprehensive approach that we have been working on, and that we have to work toward getting to the other side of this economic crisis, along with the pandemic being being resolved through health benefits.
Jay, what do you think about that? October 17th, that's the when the eviction moratorium ends. You think it should be extended, or you think it's time to get rid of it?
I think it should be extended. I think it needs a sunset clause, though. So in other words, like extended for another 30 days. I think we have to look at all the economic indicators. I know we mentioned earlier that the state is, the numbers are not that high. Well, they actually, the unemployment numbers are pretty high. It's not the highest in the nation like we were a couple of weeks ago, but it's certainly still, it's still too high for my liking. And so I think that we need to, I think I would be in favor of a 30-day extension, look at, see where all the economic indicators are, and then after that, going forward, not just continually extend, but look at other parameters. For instance, what is the issue? Are people taking advantage of the situation by just deciding not to pay their rent, for instance, because even though they're getting the unemployment benefits? I think that's something that the courts are going to be able to look at further on after an extension. I think that the housing court is well capable of figuring out, is it because somebody doesn't have the resources to pay? Okay.
Did you have a follow-up, Kevin? Okay. Charles?
Jay, you've said several times that Sue Moran stole the special election. Why do you say that?
I didn't say that she did. I said that it was stolen. And the reason for that is because we have witnesses and evidence that there were ballot harvesting. Now, ballot harvesting means that there's packages of ballots that were gathered up and delivered to the various town clerk's offices at the special election. Now, that the information that we received was that it was supposedly so-called mail-in ballots. But what was happening was they were coming in packets with sometimes more than hundreds per packet. Now, I wasn't a witness to that. I didn't see that. That information came to me, and I gave it to the, when it came to me, I referred the people to appropriate agencies who would be investigating this. I did not myself see that. But what we did see was that, for instance, in Plymouth, all of a sudden they found 800 ballots. Stuff like that is very troubling.
So, Moran, how do you respond?
Well, I think that since it was not pursued, if there was such a concern, it was deemed not credible. I think that I've been in contact with the secretary and looked at, in fact, I was just reading State House News today. There are lots of safeguards put into practice. The everyone has to sign the outside of their envelope. There are criminal penalties involved if there are any shenanigans. States that have had mail-in ballots for years, including ones that President Trump has voted in multiple times, have found that there really is almost zero problem with the credibility of any of those elections. And that's across the board.
Thank you.
Okay.
Do you have another question?
No, I'm going to ask Kevin Talgi if he's got a question.
I'd like to touch upon a favorite subject that is both my favorite, and I think it's Charles as well. We both are well-versed when it comes to water, especially when it comes to your Senate district. There are a few major water resources within it, like Silver Lake and the East-West Monpont Ponds. But there's been long-standing concerns in regards to its management, and right now I think we're in the middle of a drought. And it's probably the second one in the past 4 years. What's your understanding in regards to the status of Silver Lake and the Monpont Ponds? And is there anything that the state can do, anything that you can do as a legislator when it comes to preserving these resources? We'll start with Jay.
Okay, well, as I was campaigning around the district, it's kind of interesting when you talk about water, because there are actually some spring-fed lakes and ponds right now in Plymouth that are actually overflowing their banks, but no one apparently from the state finds that to be interesting that we have We have a bubbling aquifer, if you will, right in the town of Plymouth, in many of its lakes, and no one is tapping into those sources. So I think that's what we should do. We should do that. But there's also other issue. You mentioned about the elections, about them being the mail-in ballots. The town clerk from Sandwich put on social media that he has no faith and that there'd be no credibility in the mail-in ballets.
That's right. Shift gears on me. I was talking.
Yes,
water.
I did.
Okay.
Because I'm saying we were talking about the mail-in ballots earlier, and I can and he says he has no faith that this is going to, and no faith in the integrity of this process.
Okay. Same question, Sue. Water.
On the subject of water, so for over 5 years, I was a member of the Water Quality Coalition on Cape Cod. The Silver Lake area is a very valuable resource. And one of the most important things as a selectman, for example, is you have to look at measured development. When you have a water quality concern, you've got some areas water pressure concerns, you've got to look at and balance the development concerns and being able to plan ahead versus the ecological concerns, which once that water has an issue, it's almost impossible to bring back. So I'm in favor of protection or development in that circumstance until we fix the development aspect.
What about gun laws in the state of Massachusetts? Fine as they are, should anything be done to enhance them? What do we need to do, Sue?
So there's no reason that we need people, individuals, to have these assault-type weapons. I am absolutely in favor of gun owners' rights. I think that's very different from having available assault rifles. I think it's very different from having a system that doesn't do adequate background checks for folks who may have mental health concerns. I'm a member of Grandmothers Against Guns, which does, they're not about a blanket, just not owning any guns. They're about careful, safe gun control laws, and that's what I'm in favor of.
Jay, what are your thoughts on gun control? I think we have enough in Massachusetts. Need to do more, need to do less.
Here's the problem. You have a federal constitution, which is the Second Amendment, which allows citizens to keep and bear arms. You have Article 17 that's in the state constitution that allows pretty much the same, because the author of both those rights was John Adams. So we've got gun laws in Massachusetts. The problem is not that you have the constitutional rights to have it. It's the Massachusetts scheme that prohibits people from having them. And I'll just, there's 6 points in the statutes that they look for to deprive someone from having the right to own a firearm. But the sixth one is the most troubling, and that is it's a subjective finding that needs to be made by the licensing authority, which is usually the local police chief. If the local police chief, it's called suitability, if he feels that you're not suitable for whatever reason, he can deny you your constitutional right. Now, if it was an objective finding, then there would be probably support behind for that law, but it isn't. It's subjective.
Well, do you think, in 30 seconds, should it be a state board that makes the decision and bypasses the local chiefs, whether you should have a license to carry or not?
The local chiefs could make the decision, but they have to have standards that are objective and not subjective ones, because for whatever reason, he doesn't think this person should have one, and the courts rubber stamp that. And that's the problem that we have right now in Massachusetts.
30 seconds, Sue. Do you agree with that?
Local,
you think it should
chiefs,
be different than
local
the local chief?
Chiefs should retain the power. They know their communities. They are in the position because they are the chief protection officer for the entire community. So keep it.
Okay. Captain Tachi, questions for the candidates?
with many of the Plymouth 400th events postponed because of the pandemic, would you seek additional funds to assist with the events that may be rescheduled for 2021?
Let's start with Jay.
So what's the question?
Plymouth 400th, celebrating
birthday. What was about
would
the
you
funds?
Seek additional funding to help with next year's events?
Oh, absolutely.
How would you do that?
Well, there's a number of ways in which to do that. But let me just say this. I'm a historian, and I absolutely love the story of the Pilgrims. I've read of Plymouth Plantation, and I've been to the plantation a number of times. And I know why those people came from Great Britain or England and came here. And so I'm a historian. I appreciate that. There's plenty of places to get money to help celebrate America's hometown and the festivities to celebrate the 400th.
Was there a particular event that you were looking forward to that got postponed?
All of them. I will be attending all of them.
Not whether just one particular one that you like?
Not any particular one. I will be attending and participating in all of them.
Okay. Same question.
Thank you. So as your senator, I have been able to bring funding toward tourism, the Plymouth, the Antiquarian Society, and others. I was very proud to have been asked to speak at the Mayflower lighting. And the point is this. The tourism economy is fundamental to every town in my district. And the Plymouth 400 is important going forward, and it will happen. It will be able, it'll provide jobs, it will be able to give restaurants a boost, the shopkeepers a boost. It's absolutely crucial going forward. And in fact, I was recently at the Plymouth post office and got the commemorative stamp. It was very popular.
But wait, there's more.
Uh-huh.
Those ones right there?
Yes. Well, I didn't get that many.
Folks at home can't see.
I did not get that many. But I saw Charlie there. I did see Charlie there.
They're quite lovely. Thank you.
Is there a particular event that you would be looking forward to, or would you want to see them? Would you want to attend them all? Is there one in particular that you'd want to see?
You know, I'm looking forward to seeing the children. You know, it was terrific that Gary Mastis had the graduation, you know, right around Plymouth Rock and all of that. I think that was very important. But I'm looking forward to just, you know, kind of the parade and everyone really being able to be past COVID and healthy and able to celebrate with their families.
What I'm going to do is give you each a chance to ask each other a question. So we're getting down to the wire here. So remember, keep your answer to a minute or under. Sue, I want you to ask Jay a question, then Jay, you'll ask Sue a question. Then we're going to go to lightning round.
Sure. So I have right here a copy of the op-ed from the Enterprise, which talked about Jay having sued police officers multiple times unsuccessfully from the early 90s to 200s, including three innocent police officers from Plymouth on behalf of an accused cocaine trafficker, costing Plymouth taxpayers money to defend the town. So I asked Jay, how can you say you back the blue?
That's easy, because what you're missing out on is the, you said that it was a convicted trafficker. He wasn't. That was the problem. There was absolutely no evidence in that case.
So the
well, maybe so. But the point is that when I am an attorney, a trial attorney, and my job is to see to it that my clients receive justice. And there's certain ways to do that. On the other hand, police officers are protected by qualified immunity. Now, I know you voted for the police reform bill, and you want to strip officers of that. But I'm telling you right now that the qualified immunity is very important for every police officer, firefighter, and first responder. And to that extent, when I become the next state senator, I'm going to make sure that they maintain and keep their qualified immunity.
Okay. A quick question for Sue. Jay?
Okay. With almost 100% unanimous opposition from police organizations, and with the huge public outcry against this police reform bill since July 2020, and all that you now know today about this bill, which you voted for in July, would you still vote in favor of that very same police reform bill if the vote was taken today?
I would, and I am confident in the committee process that we will put out a bill that is very productive and will pass going forward.
Okay, let's go to lightning round. Kevin Tachi, lightning round questions. Remember, it's yes or no, or one or two sentences. Quick questions.
If a bill to reinstate the death penalty was proposed, would you support such legislature?
Yes or no, Jay?
Yes.
Sue?
No.
Charlie? Lightning.
My Wampanoag friends refer to the Pilgrims as the immigrants. So in what year did Plymouth 300 be celebrated, Jay?
And what year was it celebrated?
Yeah, 300.
Yeah, 1920.
Sue?
I'm going to say 100 years ago. If I were any good at math, I'd be a doctor, not a lawyer.
Okay.
1921.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank
you. There
you
go. That was good.
What percentage of your income do you donate to charity? Sue?
I'm going to say 5%.
Okay. Jay?
15%.
Okay. Let's go to closing statements now, and we're going to reverse the order. So we're going to begin with Sue and then go to Jay. Sue Moran.
Thank you. This election will decide who we trust to deliver vital resources back to this district. My opponent does not have the 6 years of legislative background I have working across the aisle on issues including clean water, healthcare, education, and the economy. My commitment to public service and the people of this district is clear. In the last 100 days, I've built upon my legislative experience, led bipartisan collaborations to deliver funds for schools, roads, job creation, and I will build on these results. From the South Shore to the Cape, I am the voice you can trust to make Beacon Hill productive for us, as I already have. My opponent's extreme agenda should not succeed in our district. Learn more about me at www.votemoran.com. Vote safe, vote early, and with your support, I look forward to working hard for you as your state senator.
Thank you. That was Sue Moran. Let's go to Jay McMahon.
Okay. Thank you, WATD, for hosting this debate. My opponent has mentioned about her legislative experience, but unfortunately, that experience does not translate into wise decisions while she was in office. Having lived in this district all my life and wanting my children to stay here, I have a deep love for our communities. I'm a passionate guy. What does that mean for you? It means that I will give this job everything I have. It means that I will not sell out to lobbyists or insiders as my opponent has. And it means your priorities and your concerns will be my priorities and my concerns. You have an important choice to make between now and November 3. Before you vote, you need to know a couple of things. I am proudly endorsed by the Pembroke Police Union and the New England Police Benevolent Association, and other police union endorsements are coming. I am also proud to be supported by the Pembroke School Committee, members of the Pembroke School Committee, and members of the Pembroke Board Select Board. The difference in this race are wide. You have me, who's a reasonable approach to legislation, and then you have my opponent, who is left-wing extremist.
You've been listening to a WATD Political Forum. It's the Plymouth-Barnstable State Senate race. That was Jay McMahon. We just heard from Sue Moran. This entire forum will be up on the WATD website tomorrow, 959WATD.com. PAC TV also running this. Thank you again. I'm Christine James, your moderator. Kevin Tachi asking questions with me, along with Charles Mathewson, Amy Leonard doing the timing, Larry Nelson engineering. Remember to get out and vote on November 3rd. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. Good evening and thank you.